to do that. All right, so here's where we are today. So up to this point, we've talked a lot about logic gates, ands and ors and nots, trues and falses, and higher level ideas that we can build out of logic gates. We talked about taking patterns of bits and testing them for equality, whether or not they have the same values over the bits. We talked about, at least a little bit in passing, about the notion of an if-then-else gate, a gate that takes, say, three bits as input and returns whichever one the first one is, sorry, the second one is if the first one is true, and whichever one the third one is if the first value is false. We talked about selecting one bit from a set, a universal gate. We didn't talk about them in much depth, and you may not even remember that we talked about them at all, but the point is that we talked about different ways of gluing these little Lego pieces together to create larger structures that have other purposes. And there's lots of things we can do with them. And in fact, in the Christmas light example, the state machine example, we showed that actually using these logic functions in the context of something that changes over time can give you even more power, can make very interesting sorts of things happen. In fact, with any function of bits, we can specify with logic gates. But here's the thing. Let's say that we want a machine to behave a particular way. Sort of the only thing we know how to do at this point is build a machine that does that. We don't know how to take in a machine that already exists and modify it to take on whatever task it is that we've got. So creating new circuits every time that we want to solve a new problem is daunting and inefficient. And it would have kept people like me out of the game because I don't know how to actually do that. I don't know how to build physical hardware that does these things, you know, other than out of marbles and stuff, but that's limiting. I'd like some other way of being able to get the computer to do things, get a machine to do things. So here's this great insight. The main thing I want to get across to you today is this notion that if you build the right circuit, one complicated circuit, we can set up that circuit so that it can act like any other circuit that we want. Right? So you build one, and you put it in hardware, and then we just tell it to act in different ways at different times. If you do that, then you can physically manufacture one device and then send it out into the world, and everybody who gets it can make it do something different. That's a really powerful idea, and that's exactly what makes computers so wonderful. In fact, early on in the history of computers, they talked about basically they differentiated between computers or calculators, machines that did some particular job, and general purpose computers or stored program computers, computers that you could change how they behaved after they were already built. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to take this state machine idea, this idea that you don't have to just have a circuit that takes inputs and produces outputs. It can actually produce a series of outputs over time, changing its internal state as it goes. And we're going to do that to trade gates for time. In other words, we're going to have a fixed set of gates, fairly complicated set of gates, that's going to allow us, by iterating it over time, to solve much more complicated problems that would potentially require a lot more gates to do in one shot. So I've argued with myself quite a bit about what would make a good concrete example for this, and I ended up settling on binary addition again. First of all, because we get it at this point. It's not that interesting, but it turns out it is useful, right? Having machines that can add numbers is actually very useful thing. So here's what I'd like to do. So let's look at this example. Here's a two-bit binary numbers. 1, 1 plus 1, 0, or it's like 3 plus 2, right? Which the answer is 5. If we go to add these together, what do? We take the 1 and the 0, we add them together, we get 1, and we have some carry, which in this case is 0, there's no carry. Then we add 0 plus 1 plus 1, which is 2, or 0 carry the 1, so we do 0, we carry the 1, and then we bring the 1 down. Okay? That's one particular problem. But we'd like to be able to build a machine that could solve any 2-bit addition problem. Now, yeah, again, 2 bits, who wants to add 2 bits together? Nevertheless, it's small enough that it all fits on the slide, which turns out to be useful. So let's look at what does it look like generically. The generic version of the 2-bit addition problem goes like this. We have a number, a 2-bit number, the first bit is x1, the second bit is x0. We're adding it to another 2-bit number, first bit is y1, second bit is y0. We add the x0 and the y0. Since we don't know what they are at the moment, we'll just say the answer is some variable z0 with some carry c0. Then we add c0, x1, and y1. We get some number z1 with a c1 carry, and then we carry the c1 down to get z2. All right. So this is just generic. Yes?
How do you know that there's a carry? If you don't know.
It could be 0. If the carry is 0, it'll just be 0. Is that right? So this, the leading bit, like if we're adding 0, 0 plus 0, 0, we get 0 carry to 0, 0 carry to 0, 0. So this way, anything we want can be put into this form, as long as we don't mind the extra zeros. All right, so what we need to do now is specify a logic function that says, well, we're given x1, x0, y1, and y0, and what we need to know is what are the values of z going to be, and what are the values of c going to be. Okay? So what we need to do is figure out logical functions that would give the right answer, given the values of x0, x1, y0, y1. All right. So let's start this out slow. All right. So we need, given x0 and y0, the first thing we need to do is figure out what z0 is. So let's think about that for a moment. Actually, the easier one is to do the carry. Let's do the carry first. So if we're adding two 2-bit numbers, all right, this is x0, this is y0. When are we going to get, what value is this carry going to take on? Well, when is the carry going to be 1? What values do x0 and y0 have to have for the carry to be a 1? This one has to be a 1. And the other one? Also has to be a 1. So the only time that c0 is on, 1, is if both c0 is 1 and y0 is on. So what logic function does that for us? And. Could be and. Could be and. You can say that. It's great. It is and, right? That's exactly what and does. And takes, produces a 1-bit only if the two input bits are 1. So, and that's exactly what the carry is. And in fact, I have it written on the slide already. Whatever x0 is and y0 is, c0 will be on only if both of these guys are on. So that's the easiest one. What about z0? When does the last bit turn on? Well, it's a function of x0 and y0. So let's, we'll do this as a truth table. So x0 and y0, they can be both 0. They could be, one could be 1 and the other one 0. They could be both 1. If both of the last bits are 0 and we add them, what's this going to be? Right? If this is 0 and this is 0, then what's z0 going to be? 0? Yeah. On the other hand, if x0 is 0 and x1 is 1, what is z0 going to be? 1. I heard a bunch of mumbled 1s and no mumbled 0, so I'll take that. And of course, if it's the other way around, x0 is 1 and y0 is 0, we still get 1. But what happens if they're both on? So x1 is 1, y0 is 1, we're going to have a carry, but what is this bit going to be? What is z0 going to be? 0, right, exactly. All right, so z0 equals some logical function of x0 and y0. Now, if you look at this, you might recognize it as something that I at least mentioned in passing. This is called the, does anyone want to guess it? Or I don't want to steal anybody's thunder. Does anybody recognize what logic function this is? So the output is 1 if either of the inputs are 1, but not both. If both of the inputs are 1, then the output's 0. Do you remember what it's called?
Or?
It's kind of or. The regular kind of or looks like that.
Yes.
So this is a slightly different kind of or. I heard it. XOR, exclusive OR. So exclusive OR is the kind of OR like, would you like chicken or fish? And if you say both, that's not okay, right? You have to choose chicken or fish, not both. You know, chicken or fish, but not both. And apparently you're not allowed to choose neither, right? Would you like chicken or fish? No thank you. What do you mean no thank you? I said chicken or fish. It's only valid if you choose one. All right. So this is XOR, but if we have to represent this in terms of ands and ors and nots, then we need to do something a little different. So I've said this a couple times in passing. Let me try to say it a little bit more carefully. So what we're going to do is we have to say, in which cases is this bit on? It's on if x0 is off and y0 is on. So if not x0 and y0, right? This is a logical function. This is true only in the case where x0 is 0 and y0 is 1. So that's one way it could be on. Another way, or, is this case here. If x1 is on and y0 is off, in other words, if x0 and not y0, then again, we would like z0 to be true. And so this is another way of writing this is x0, xor, y0. But if we had to do it in terms of ands and ors and nots, that's what we get. And I have it on the slide. Right, so the two ways that z0 will be on is if x0 is true and y0 is false, or x0 is false and y0 is true. Okay?
XOR
is another logical function that is defined like that. But I've been trying to avoid it. It's convenient to use. But it really, it just unpacks into this. You could just write it that way. Yes, good.
An example of that and equals 0 through 1. Just like a quick example.
Sure. So we have the one that's up there. Why don't you tell me what bits I should add? Do you want to give me a bit pattern?
1, 1, 0, 1.
Oh, like a long one.
No. Okay, yeah, just that then. It would probably be easier to do it like that.
1, 1 plus 0, 1, right? 1 plus 1 is 2, which is 0, carry the 1.
5.
1 plus 1 is, again, 0, carry the 1, because it's a 2. Okay. So it would be 1, 0, 0. Yeah. And what we're trying to figure out now is, generically, how do we tell the computer in terms of logic gates what this bit is going to be as a function of these two, what this bit is going to be as a function of these two, what this bit is going to be as a function of these three, and so forth. Yeah?
I have a question.
Sure.
What happens when, like, you carry the 1 and it's 1, 1, and then a 1?
So you're wondering, what if the answer is 4 bits instead of 3? Is that what you're asking?
No, like, yeah. what if it was 11 plus 11?
Okay, good.
Like, I forgot what you do when there's 3 1s.
It's fine. Oh, then it's 3, which is a 1, carry the 1.
Can you do
that? Sure. All right, so 1, 1, we don't call it 11 because it's actually 3, but yeah, okay, 1, 1 plus 1, 1. 1 plus 1 is 0, carry the 1. Aha, now we've got 1 plus 1 plus 1, which is 3. That is, to write 3 is 1, 1. So it's the lower digit is 1 and the carry digit is 1. So then we end up with that as the answer.
So like when you add...
Does that make sense? 3 plus 3 is 6. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
When it comes to 3, you carry the 1.
When it comes to, when you have 1 plus 1 plus 1, you put, 1 and you carry a 1. And if you're adding only two different numbers together, you can never get more than that, right? You can never carry anything more than a single bit. And the most that you can have is the carry bit is on, the bit that you want to add, the first bit that you're adding is on, the second bit you're adding is on. And so that's the maximum. So we never can have, say, a 4-bit answer if we're adding two bits numbers together. Is that turning into a question over there, or just a, okay, discomfort? All right. Okay, good? All right, so the next thing we want to do now is figure out, we now know that z0 can be written as a function of x0 and y0. We know that the first carry of it, c0, can be rewritten as a function, a very simple function of x0 and y0. What we'd like to do next is say, all right, the bit that's in this position, z1, we need to now write what z1 is going to be as a function of what the carry was, what x1 is, and what y1 is. So this is now a Boolean function of 3 variables. There's only 8 possibilities, but we're not going to step through them. It's a little bit tedious, and the formula ends up looking... One version of the formula looks like this. Don't worry about the details. The important thing here is that it takes this formula. It takes c0, the carry, y1, this number, and x1, this number, and tells us in what situations will z1 be on. True or 1. Okay? So when are we going to actually get a 1 in here? And we score all those different possibilities together. And then the carry, the C1 carry, is a very similar looking function of those 3 bits. And then of course Z2, the final answer, final bit on the answer, is really just the same as the carry, just carry it right now. So these formulas together implement 2-bit addition. So the details of exactly how or why, I don't care if you know. But the idea of what we're trying to do here is specify a system for somebody tells us values for x1, x0, y1, and y0, and then we're going to run through these formulas, and it's going to basically add the numbers for us. It's going to tell us which of these bits need to be on, and therefore what the answer is in binary. So it's addition, but it's all implemented in terms of logic gates. Okay? We can extend this example arbitrarily as many bits as we want. You just have to repeat something that looks a lot like this over and over again. But what you don't want to do is build a calculator that only adds 2-bit numbers, and then to find out later that you actually would like it to add 3-bit numbers, and have to gut the whole thing and put a whole bunch of new formulas in there. Okay? So what we're going to do next, I mean, we could implement this, we just did, in terms of ands, ors, and nots, but we're going to take it one step farther and say, we're going to create a general purpose circuit that we could tell to do this computation. All right. So just a little bit of background. Computing the sum and the carry bit from the input bits and the end of the carry, you can do it with 6 ands, 3 ors, and 4 nots. The one that I showed actually took 16 ands, 6 ors, and 9 nots, which is not as good. It was the first thing that occurred to me. It seemed straightforward. But it turns out that people have thought about this a lot, because deep down in the bowels of the computer, it's doing a lot of this work. You want to make it take the fewest number of gates in the fastest way that you could possibly do it. And so people boiled it down quite a bit. That process where you take the carry bit and 2 bits, figure out what the sum is and what the next carry is, that's just repeated over and over again when you add 2 numbers. So they have a name for it. Computer engineers call that a full adder. It takes a carry bit, and then the X and the Y produces the bit and the carry for the next number. You just chain these together, and you can make a circuit that adds any number of bits together. So that's a useful thing to be able to do. And doing subtraction is not so different from this. Making a something that just increments a number is not so different from this. It's the same idea over and over again. All right. So any function we want to implement from bits to bits, we can do this by putting the right circuit together of ands, ors, and nots. That would be solving the problem in hardware. Doing things in hardware is actually a good idea. Things end up being very fast. These ands, ors, and not gates can just, they just zoom. It's fractions of a nanosecond. The disadvantage is that they're inflexible. Once you've created the circuit to be this way, that's all it can be. So we'd like to trade these off. We'd like an answer that's maybe slower, but more flexible. So that's what we're going to do. I'm going to give an example of a fixed set of circuits that actually can change behavior to be whatever we want it to be. So you build one, you reprogram it into anything. Of course, the disadvantage is it can be much slower. Now, where there was actually a little transistor on a circuit board that was doing the work for you, now there's a whole bunch of circuits working together each time you want to do an operation like that. So it ends up being a bit slower. Millions of times slower. But these things are so fast that it doesn't really affect you all that much. All right. So what I'd like to do is step through programming an adder together, this 2-bit adder together. So this is a nice picture I found online that is the full adder. It requires an XOR, 2 XORs, 2 ANDs, and an OR. And it looks like this. It's adding A and B together and a carry, A, B, and C, and producing S, the sum, and C, the next carry. And it does that by defining an intermediate value, which turns out to also be an XOR. So it really is, it's beautifully simple. I mean, it's completely impenetrable to figure out why this actually works. But it's very small, which is good. All right, so here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to take one of these expressions. In this case, we want the value of E, variable E, to take on the value of this Boolean expression, which is H and not C, or not H and C, which is an XOR. And so the way that we're going to provide this information to our little circuit interpreter thing is by breaking it down into tiny little steps. And so here's the steps, and this may not make a lot of sense right away, but let me say it anyway. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take the value of C, invert it, flip its value, and then store it in a special place called the accumulator. Then we're going to take the value of the accumulator and AND it with whatever is in H, store that new answer back in the accumulator. I'm going to say this once, and then I'll step through it and show that it does what we want it to do. Then we're going to take the value of the accumulator and store it in a new temporary storage place called P. Then we're going to take the value of H, invert it, store it in the accumulator, take the value of C, add it with what's in the accumulator, take the value of P that we stored a little while ago, OR it with the accumulator, store it back in the accumulator, and then finally write the answer, take whatever's in the accumulator at the end, and write it into this value E. And I claim that if you follow these steps, each of which is very tiny, but you string them together, you do them in order, and it does exactly this. It takes whatever H was, whatever C was, calculates the value of this expression, and stores it in E. So this is basically a very, very, very simple program. So let's see, how would I like to show you this? So we've got some Boolean value H, which we'll say, let's say it's true. We've got some Boolean value C, which we'll say is false. We've got, we want to make the answer, it's going to get stored in some Boolean variable E, and you know, just for a little scratch space, we have a Boolean variable P that we're going to use. All right, so let's see what this does. The first, and there's also this thing called the accumulator, which is just another place to store a Boolean value. So the first thing it says to do is take whatever's in C, which is false in this case, invert it, which makes it true, and store the answer in the accumulator. Okay? We've now finished the first instruction. Second instruction. We take whatever's in the accumulator, and we add it with whatever's in H. So true and true is true. And so we store that value back into here, which at the moment is already true, so nothing changes. All right, now the next instruction says take whatever's in the accumulator and store it in P. So it takes this true value and sticks it in here, just copies it in. All right, next instruction says take whatever's in H and invert it. So this becomes we take this true, we take the opposite of it, which is false, and store that answer in the accumulator. So the accumulator now stores false after this instruction. Now we take the accumulator and AND it with whatever's in C and store that answer in the accumulator. So what is that going to produce? The accumulator is now going to have either true or false. So who thinks true? Who thinks false? Who thinks that you're completely lost at the moment? All right, we have a fair number of lost people. All right, so let me think of where I might have lost you.
Each of the instructions were a little.
So generically, each of these instructions has the form of some Boolean expression of variables gets stored in some place. So if you were thinking about, if you're thinking about kind of standard, more algebra looking things, you might say something like x equals 3 plus z, right? So this is an expression that says whatever 3 is plus z, that's equal to x. But in this case, it's actually a command. It's actually saying, figure out this and store it in there. So all the expressions have that form. So let me make sure that you get that. Right? So accumulator is just a Boolean variable. We've had Boolean variables like x and y and a and b, right? So now one has multiple letters in its name. Don't let that throw you. Alright? But what this expression is saying is take whatever h is, knot it, and put the answer in there. How's that sitting with people? Is that okay? Some of you may have seen things like this, but I'm not sure the right way of triggering the thought in your head. So you'll say, oh, that's the same as, I don't know. Can anyone ask me a question about it? So let's go back up to the top, and we'll do the hand raising thing again and see how that changes things. So at the very top, the first thing it says is accumulator gets not C. So what value will the accumulator have after we execute that expression, that command? Yeah. That would be false. Why false? Or true. Okay, we got false or true. Anyone want to add anything to that? It's true?
False.
So let's do trolls. Good old trolls. That's going to come back to haunt me, isn't it? Now you have a word for, I don't know.
Explode.
Trolls makes the computer explode. So after we execute this statement, who thinks the accumulator will have the value true? And who thinks it'll have the value false? And who has another, who can ask a question? Because you don't know yet.
Wait, which one is cumulative in each?
This says the accumulator gets the value of not C.
Not C, you mean assume it's false.
Not, well, look at C. So here we have on our billboard, we have values for each of the values for each of the variables. Some of them are not written in yet because they don't matter. But so to know what value C has, you have to actually kind of look on the board. And in this case, C has the value false, so not C. That's what it starts off with, yes, that's right. Or that's what it is right now. See, with state machines, all that matters is what's happening right now, because they usually don't remember very much from the past. Very short attention spans on these things. So this is what's happening right now, and now we want to know what's going to happen next. How's that going to change things? And what this command says is, the way we're going to change things is, forget about what was in the accumulator before, it doesn't matter anymore. All that matters is we're going to take whatever the value of C is, flip it, and store that in the accumulator. So that's what it's going to do. It's going to grab this false value, make it into a true value, and stick it in the accumulator. Okay? So there's a couple places where, you see, you're making a frowny face, and I'm trying to figure out, is it why, or is it what was that? Because we haven't quite gotten all the way to why yet. But I'd like just mechanically for us to understand what these steps are supposed to do, how it changes what's stored in the variables. This is really just a state machine, just like the Christmas lights, right? We're just saying after the next step of the Christmas lights, something has to have changed, and what changed? Does that make you want to ask a question? All right, gotta come up with something else. I'm gonna keep stepping through, and then there'll be some ahas, and there'll be some okay, now I know how to ask the question, and there'll be some who just don't get it, and I'm not sure what to do. But anyway, so I'm just going to continue. All right, so this is, let's just do this. Everybody get a piece of paper. So I'm going to read these commands in words, and you're going to execute them. All right, and you need your own little scoreboard with a value for H and a value for C, and I'd like everybody to make up their own value for H and C. Okay? In fact, well, we're at the end, we'll do it with the clipboard. Can we do that? No, never mind. I thought we could turn it into a clicker. There's too many choices. We need like 8 choices, and the clicker only goes up to 5. So you give yourself something that looks like this. You've got a box for H, a box for C, a box for E, a box for P, and a box for the accumulator. Just put them empty. Once you have that, I want everybody to individually pick. Write either true or false in H, whichever one you'd like. Write either true or false in the C box, whichever one you like. And I'm hoping that all the different combinations, someone will be trying each of these. All right? So now I don't know, this is back to the magic trick person, right? I don't know what you've written on your page. But what I'm going to do is talk you through a series of instructions so that by the end of it, this value is going to have some relationship to the numbers that you chose. All right, so here's how we're going to do it. First thing I want you to do is take whatever you wrote down for C and flip its value and write that answer into the accumulator box, the ACC box. Okay, so if the C box is true, write down false. If the C box is false, write down true. Did I say the same thing twice? No, okay, never mind. All right, everybody got that? All right, so the next one is a little trickier. Take whatever values in the accumulator and add it with whatever values in H. That means that you're going to take, if the accumulator is true and H is true, then write down, scratch out whatever was in the accumulator and write true. Otherwise, write false in the accumulator. Okay? The only way your accumulator should be true now is if it was true a moment ago and H is true. All right? If you don't know what to write, ask before it just continues to spiral out of control. Yeah? So this, the statement you should do now is take whatever was in the accumulator, it's either true or false, look to see whatever's in H, it's either true or false. If they're both true, then I guess then you leave the accumulator alone, right, because it was true already. However, if H was false, then scratch out the true in the accumulator and put in false instead. So make the accumulator false if H is false.
So I'm guessing that true or false means false.
True. true and false is false, right? The only way you can get true out of an and is if it's true and true. Not plus. Yeah, because we also have or. And we're having a war in a minute. Right, so if you haven't gotten this idea yet, both the inputs are false. So they're kind of weird twisted mirror images of each other. Okay? And I assume not, we get. If not, send me. All right? So now what you should have just done is taken what was in the accumulator before, and it with H, meaning if they're both true, write true in the accumulator box, otherwise write false in the accumulator box. We good? All right, next statement says, take whatever is in your accumulator box right now and write it in the P box. Just copy it. Copy it into P. That one should be straightforward. All right. Now another relatively simple one. Take whatever is in H, flip its value, and write it in the accumulator. So if H is true, write false in your act box. If H is false, write true in your act box. Erase the old value. What's that? If H is true, write false in your act box. If your H is false, write true in your act box. Not. Okay? Take whatever's in your accumulator right now, and if it's true and C is true, then leave your accumulator as true, which we're adding them. However, if either of these two things is false, write false. Right? If the accumulator should only be true now if it was just true and C is also true right now. Otherwise, write false in your accumulator box.
What if C is true and accumulator is false?
Then leave it false. Because false and true is false. Yeah?
False and false?
False and false is false. The only way it can be true with an and is if they're both true. Otherwise, it's false. Alright, good? Now we're going to do an or with the accumulator. So whatever's in the accumulator right now, it's either true or false. Look to see whatever's in P. If it's true or false, and if either of them are true, then make the accumulator true. Otherwise, make it false. So the accumulator was true, or P was true, it's now true. Otherwise, false. Okay? Now we're almost done. Take whatever's in the accumulator and write it into E. It could be true, it could be false. If it's, say, chocolate, then you've made a mistake. Because it really should only be true or false.
And Trolls is not on the table here, just making sure.
Trolls is not on the table. There's no Trolls, there's just true and false. Heard that one. Okay, all right, so I claim now, if everything worked according to plan, and there's many places the plan could break down, but if everything went according to plan, whatever is in your H box, and whatever is in your C box, if they're the same, then you should have written false in your E box, but if they're different, you should have written true in your E box. If that worked, show me your hand. If you're asleep, just stay right where you are. It's cool. All right, thank you. Okay, very good. All right, I think we've gone over some sort of threshold here. I feel okay about that. Did anyone want to ask any questions about what just happened? Yeah, go ahead.
Did these steps here on the right figure out that equation at the bottom left there?
Yes.
So what
these steps on the right caused you guys, all of you at once, to execute this statement. E became H and not C, or not H and C. In other words, H XOR C. Where did you carried out the XOR in a series of steps. Go ahead.
So where did P come from?
P, I just needed as a little scratch space. So I had a temporary result, and I needed to hold on to it for later, so I just stuffed it in P. P stands for temporary. No, it was just it was the 16th letter of the alphabet. You'll see later why it's P. But it's just, we just used it temporarily, and then we threw it away. The value of the, what is the value? What is your P, by the way? And I know that's a personal question.
Mine's true.
Yours is true. And what was your H and C? What
true,
was H?
True and false.
True and false. So I think in general, let's take a look at this. P is going to be the value of this clause. So if your H is true and your C is false, then it's true. Yeah, so this is the only way it can be true, is if you have true, false, like that. Everybody else should have false in this box. Unless they also had a TTF like that, okay? All right, so we've been executing these kinds of statements of trues and falses on the little clicker quizzes often this semester. But now what we've done is we've actually broken it down into tiny, tiny little steps. Now, why did these steps give us this answer? You may not care, and I may not want to show you, but I'm going to show you anyway. All right, after the first step, the accumulator gets not C. So whatever C was, the accumulator is going to be the opposite of it. Then the accumulator is going to get ANDed with H. So this is now not C and H. Okay. The next step says store that in P. So the value in P now is whatever your value of C was, NOTTed, ANDed with H. Okay. The next step says throw away what's in the accumulator and make it not H. The step after that says take whatever's in the accumulator and AND it with C. The next one says, take whatever you've got now in the accumulator and OR it with P. Well, P, we know, was storing this expression. So we've just done this. And finally, that, whatever this turned out to be, gets written into E. In other words, E gets to be the value of this expression, which is exactly what it is we were trying to work out. Okay, so this is symbolically. The computer doesn't do things this way. The computer actually just executes the steps that we told it to execute. But that's why it works. That's why I made up these series of steps specifically so that when all was said and done, E would get this value, the XOR. Okay? Okay? All right. If this is all you get by the end of class, I'm actually pretty happy, but I'm going to push on anyway. All right. So here's what we're going to do. You see all these funny statements. Well, it turns out that there's kind of a family of statements that are all really closely related to each other. Here's the family portrait. Let's imagine that we've got 16 different variables, A through P, the first 16 letters of the alphabet. Here are the different things we can do. We can take whatever's in the accumulator, and we can AND it with any variable we want, storing it back in the accumulator. That's one of our instructions. Another one is, take whatever's in the accumulator and OR it with one of the variables, store it back in the accumulator. Instruction 2. Another thing we can do is take a variable and store it directly in the accumulator. That's instruction 3. We can take whatever's in a variable, take the NOT of it and store it in the accumulator. Instruction 4. We can also store things back into variables. We can store, we didn't use any of these in what I just showed you, but you can take the accumulator, AND it with a variable, and store that answer in a variable instead of the accumulator. You can OR and store it in a variable. You can take the accumulator and store it into a variable. And you can take the negation of the accumulator and store it in a variable. So I chose these 8 statements so that they'd be, you know, relatively simple, but they would allow me to write anything that I wanted to write as long as I could fit it into 16 variables. Here's how I label the variables. A is 000, all the way through P is 111. Oops, sorry. So now if we had a statement, well, I think it's on the next slide. Okay, maybe like 7 slides later. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to take each of those instructions and encode it as a series of bits. So for example, here's a series of 7 bits. All the instructions are 7 bits. Here's how you should interpret it. The last 4 bits tells us what variable we're working with. The first bit says whether we're going to store the answer in the accumulator or variable. And the middle 2 bits say whether we've got an OR, an AND, straightforward, or a NOT. So So in particular, this bit pattern, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0, the first bit is a 1, so this is going to be stored into a variable. The second two bits are 0, 1, which is how we're encoding and. And the last four bits are 1, 0, 0, 0, which is variable I. And so this bit pattern corresponds to the instruction I equals the accumulator and I. All the instructions we had in that program before can all be written as 7-bit patterns, right? As long as your variables just go up to P, which is why I chose P. All right, so it turns out what you can do with this is the following. I didn't quite do all of it, and it doesn't matter because you wouldn't want me to anyway. The point is that I can build one circuit with a whole lot of gates, but just a fixed number of gates that can take any instruction, any of those 7-bit patterns, and actually do it, actually execute that instruction, changing the values of the variables, changing the values of the accumulator, and then write out the answers back to the other side. And this circuit becomes a finite state machine, just like the Christmas lights. We take whatever was in the program, whatever in the accumulator, whichever step we were in the program, and the values of the Boolean variables, we change them according to the rules, we get new answers on the other side, we copy them back into the top, and we just do them over and over and over again. And what that causes to happen is it actually does those same instructions that you guys did on your paper. This circuit will do step by step by step, and therefore by giving it the right series of instructions, we can get it to carry out any Boolean operation that we want. Again, given that we're constrained to only use 16 different variables. That's actually the whole program right there. All right, so I've got 2 minutes. I'm gonna try to squeeze in one more idea. I just have to decide which one. The other really important thing to understand is that the program itself is stored in memory. And the way that the way that memory works is like a giant filing cabinet. And so in particular, we need some way of saying, tell me what we're up to the sixth instruction. What is the sixth instruction? And so there's a circuit that takes the Boolean representation of the number 6 and the content of the memory, and then produces whatever is in the sixth place in memory, okay, whatever the sixth instruction is. So it's sort of like we task the circuit or the screwdriver with going into the memory and coming back out with, here's the next instruction you need to execute. And so I actually have a demo that I could run, which I'll probably spend a couple minutes on next time, since I'm out of time, where you can actually put in the instructions one after the other, and it'll actually execute them out and carry out the task. But again, just as a series of circuits with a finite state machine to carry the values back through. All right, so that's all I have time to tell you about this time. I'll pick this up next time. And I'll start in on, I think I can wrap this up and start in on subroutines next time. The reading, I think, is the first two sections of chapter 3, which talks about logo programs, things like that.